Welcome to the Market Genius AI podcast. This is our RevTech edition of the show, where we showcase go-to-market tools and discuss trends, strategies, and development with leaders of those tools.
In this episode, our guest is David Nelson, CEO of Traction Complete. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you here. Let's just dive right in and hear the elevator pitch, high-level overview of what Traction Complete does.
Sounds good. So we believe that data can be this incredible instruction set for businesses if it's done properly. The struggle is that we're all moving so fast and creating so much data that Salesforce becomes this very expensive database with kind of crummy data. And so we've been on this mission to help improve the lives of go-to-market folks and revenue operations teams by creating a suite of data management solutions that help to clean up data, connect data to make it more actionable, and then orchestrate or automate the movement of that data to get it into the hands of the right reps at the right time so that we can really help companies understand their customers better and focus more of their time on what they do best to create relationships and sell their products.
I think we've all been there looking at a CRM of some kind and thinking like, what are we going to do with all of this? And I'm assuming you were potentially in that place as well. And I'd love to kind of hear what you were doing before and what kind of led to the founding of Traction Complete.
Yeah, good question. So we have a bit of a different background than a lot of founders.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so we're not the story of kind of two founders in a garage with an idea. We were bred out of a Salesforce consulting company called Traction On Demand. So Traction did a lot of custom implementations, integrations, custom code, et cetera, for companies that were buying new licenses or different clouds of Salesforce. And it ran the gamut of, you know, doing data cleanup to doing a massive transformation of business that hooked into ERP systems and donation systems and whatnot, and using MuleSoft and all sorts of different clouds from Salesforce marketing, commerce, et cetera. So yeah, then over that time, we had a lot of repeat requests for similar functionality. And so the idea was, hey, we can probably start to productize these and take them to market repeatedly instead of building it custom every single time. And so that's what we started to do. We started to create products that helped with data management and then some others as well as we grew the business.
I think it's a great approach. I think I've worked at a media agency before, but for media agencies, consultancies that are solving the same thing over and over and over again, it's like, why don't we build a tech product that we can use internally for the set of clients we already have? And we initially have a client list that we will most likely be able to use this on and get feedback on it and use it internally. And then you can grow from there. And it's just building out multiple revenue streams for consultancy or agency. So I love that approach to starting a business. And are you still with Traction On Demand, or is it a separate company at this point?
Yes. You know what? We had some success. We grew Traction On Demand to about 1,400 people, and we actually sold the consulting side of the business to Salesforce 2 years ago. So they bought the consulting team and brought them into Salesforce Professional Services. And we spun out not just one, but three product companies at that time, and have been off growing them since.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, a little different.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear about like what the financing journey has been coming from. You're already within a company that could fund some of this, but what does that look like for Traction Complete?
Yeah, interesting journey, right? So when we started the process of creating products, we were having to kind of grow organically because the primary business was consulting, and it wasn't fair to be taking profit away from consulting and pump it into products where all of the consultants wanted to be able to reap that in order to continue to grow. So once we sold off the consulting side of the business, we went and did a Series A round of funding to do a couple of things. Because I think on the one hand, we had this fantastic exit, and so probably didn't need the money, but also recognized to have an established board with external financing meant that you have a lot more scrutiny and you're not just kind of running with whatever idea you have at the time. But it also helped establish an external valuation on the strike price of the options. So it created an ESOP pool for the rest of the employees.
Probably negotiate better terms when that's your position going into some things. It's very interesting. Well, I want to see what the product looks like. Can we jump into the demo and check it out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What's the use case you want to share with us, David?
So I'll go through a few use cases. Again, I mentioned about the importance of data quality. So I'm going to go through cleaning up data, connecting it, and orchestrating it. I'll start with cleaning up data. And the analogy that I like to use that helps kind of frame it for everyone is brushing your teeth and going to the dentist. Hopefully everyone's brushing their teeth every day, sometimes multiple times a day. And yet we still have to go to the dentist a couple times a year because things start to build up, right? To do a full clean. So I'm going to start by going through and cleaning up data. And as I mentioned before, we're creating so much data all the time. We're creating it manually in Salesforce. We're bringing in third-party systems and list uploads. And that inevitably causes duplicates that you have to go clean up. And so again, in this analogy of going to the dentist, we're going to do a full clean. We're going to look at that database, find those duplicate records, and clean it up. Reduce them, merge them into the individual records that they can be with the best data. Now, it gets a little complex because there's all sorts of rules that you want to figure out along the way. To keep the demo short, I'll focus on an easy use case where we're looking at leads and we're matching them by email match. So an exact match on email. Now, you can get a lot more sophisticated. You can get into fuzzy matching and duplicate rules. You can determine logic around what would define a duplicate. And that's really important around accounts, where an account has different addresses, names, domains, that kind of thing. For leads, we'll just keep it simple for this demo. But you want to set the criteria. And then after you've done that, decide, okay, well, once we find duplicates, and I'll show you some in a minute, which ones should survive? Is it the oldest record? Is it the newest record? Is it the one that has the most recent activity? Is it the one that has the most campaign members? It can be whatever it is that you determine would be best for your business. And you can set it up here in kind of a cascade as well, so that if you find some that have the same age, et cetera, they're brought in the same list upload, then you can default to activity, that sort of thing. Now, what happens when those records, some has a phone number and some doesn't? You can say, well, even if we're going to survive the one that doesn't have the phone number, let's bring the phone number in from one that does. And there's also complexity around things like, hey, let's say someone opted out of your marketing messaging. You probably want to prioritize that, even if it's not the winning record, so that you don't get hit with like anti-spam laws. Okay, so we've gone through the rules definition. Customers would obviously spend more time choosing all those. But what does it look like? Now we've gone through and run a match. It's crawled through all the records, in this case, leads in the database, and it's found those that have the same email address. And you can see there's pages of these. What we try to do is highlight, and hopefully it's showing up on the screen share, the records that will survive based on your rules, as well as the fields that will be on that surviving record. So you can see here that the phone wasn't included on that surviving record, but we're going to bring it in from one of the others. And likewise, that opt-out was on a different record, and we'll bring that onto the new one. So I'll stop there and just see if you have any questions before we move on.
Yeah, so it's not only optimizing for the contacts itself, it's also optimizing for accounts, and it helps to determine the right number of these and volume of these accounts. So it's extremely helpful during the planning process when I need to assess, okay, how many accounts we have based on this criteria, because I'm trying to figure out what my segmentation will be next year, right?
Yeah, such a good point. And you're exactly right. I chose leads here, but it could be accounts, contacts, custom objects, opportunities, et cetera, whatever it is that you need to clean up. And you're exactly right. When you go into territory planning, it's really important to know if you're using number of accounts as one sort of balancing between territories that you have an accurate number. The example I like to use is marketing for leads. A lot of times they're measuring and they're setting goals around how many leads are we going to bring in this quarter? So let's say they bring in 10,000 leads. Well, if 20% of those already existed, they didn't really bring in 10,000 leads. They brought in 8,000 leads and the rest of them were duped that they already had in the system.
So yes, you're putting essentially a little bit more pressure on marketing to demand generation specifically to ensure that, you know, they bring in the net new, not the, you know, what we already had in the database. And maybe you had a signal that was some time ago, but now you're counting this as a new one. So how automated this can be, because, you know, the marketing needs to get on the call and explain to me, you know, where are they standing in terms of the quarterly target, the monthly target on that front. Is this can be done you know, in a few minutes, or that can be done over a couple of days.
What this allows you to do is just get an accurate reflection of your data, and then you can put the pressure on marketing if that's the plan. But yeah, good question. So when you start, a lot of the initial setup is just choosing your rules. What is your definition of a duplicate? Leads, pretty simple. You can do like name and company or email. Accounts gets more sophisticated. You might actually want to do waves where you're matching on exact match on name and address, but then you get fuzzier for those accounts that don't have an address, that sort of thing. So once you've chosen the rules, it's really quick. In fact, we save the merge plan so that you can run it again later. So you can go to the dentist again in 6 months from now, or a quarter from now, or however frequently you'd like, because all those rules are defined and it just finds the new ones and we'll clean those up.
Can you set them to auto run? So essentially, like, every week I want to remove duplicates and just go.
You can. You can set jobs to do it. And I'll actually show you in a minute how we orchestrate to do it automatically, that kind of brushing your teeth analogy as well. And if there was ever a problem that you disagree with, oh, shoot, I set the wrong rule, because everyone gets really nervous once it gets time to delete data, you can actually roll that back. You can roll back over a 30-day period to say, okay, you know what, we screwed up, let's go do it again. After 30 days, we delete that data so that it's actually cleaning up the database.
Yeah.
So here you could merge an individual set by clicking on the merge button if you're happy with these. Let's say I actually disagreed and I wanted to choose a different phone number. Once I click merge, it'll just do those records. And once I'm happy, I probably didn't save something. Once I'm happy with it, I can actually click merge all and go clean up the entire database. But now let's move on to the idea of brushing your teeth. So we're constantly bringing data in, manually creating, bringing it for marketing automation, list uploads. We want to keep it clean ongoing. And so how do we do that? We set up this orchestration or automation that says, let's first check to see internally, what kind of matches do we make? Was it a duplicate of a lead? Was it a duplicate of a contact with the same email address? And if so, you can merge those together automatically. But you want to notify people through Slack or email or other mediums to let them know what happened, right? Because it's a new expression of interest. But let's say it wasn't a duplicate. If that lead came in, it was from a partner. You probably want to assign to the partner team. If it matched to an existing account, did it have an open opportunity? And if it did, probably send it to the sales rep. Or was an existing customer? If so, send it to the account manager, et cetera. So there's all these rules that you'd want to typically set up to orchestrate your business. Most of the time, you've never heard of this lead before. It's brand new. And so you want to assign it based on your territory rules. And those can get really sophisticated, right? You have different rules in America versus EMEA versus Asia Pac. In fact, you might have different people who manage those rules. And so we've created the ability to segment it so that someone can manage the EMEA rules and not be able to touch the American rules. And so you can create what we call a nested flow to be able to go in and create those rules independently, give the permission for someone to do that, where they can do whatever those rules are. Now, this can get really complex, as you can see. So we wanted the ability to kind of annotate and create notes to explain what's happening here, because someone's created it and a new person that comes in might have no idea what's going on, because it can get fairly big. So you can add these sticky notes, you can create these sections to partition things off.
Like the best qualities of an orchestration platform and a Miro board that you can like actually notate things. Yep.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, that's pretty important. I think, you know, there's always be something, right? The bus is late, somebody's sick, and we don't know what it is, and we got to change this immediately, right? So that's definitely helpful to document what really is behind these charts.
That was such a good segue. It was a great segue because you're exactly right. So let's say you do all this work. And why do you put all that effort into choose your rules? It's because you want to get it to the right rep who has the best chance to convert that into a deal and to respond quickly. But what happens if they're sick, like you said, or they're busy, or they're on the phone? So we create a timer that's timing how long it's taken to respond. And if it passes a threshold, you can see it's in red now because it's 4 hours. You can actually set up rules to take it away and give it to someone else who can just respond right away. They might not be the optimal person, but at least you can get back to that customer without making them sit there and wait.
Yeah, time to react is so critical in BDR space, right? And it's become even more critical with all the attention we can get. And it's really hard to do that these days, right?
Exactly.
Unless you're running for US presidency, you get a lot of attention. But I think, you know, it's a very good point, very good feature that helps people to stay up to date. And if they don't take the chance, there's somebody else that will take this.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about some other feature that maybe you have, maybe you're thinking about.
Sure.
A lot of sellers or BDRs, they have their own territory as a definition for account purposes, right? So is there something that I can really define this and ensure that I can easily upload the list of accounts, or I can define this based on the industry? And, you know, some verticals are still working in some companies, right?
I love it. It's another great segue. Accounts follow all of the same struggles that we went through with leads, right? There can be duplicates, et cetera. And it's part of a territory, so it needs assignment, like we were just showing. And it gets even more complex, right? Because it's part of a territory, because it might be part of a hierarchy. So in this case, I'm on Geico, which is an insurance company. And we created the ability to crawl through all the accounts in your Salesforce environment, find those that are part of a bigger business, and automatically put them into a hierarchy if they're part of something else. So here you can see Geico is owned by Berkshire Hathaway. Typically what happens, to get to your question, is that someone should own the entire family tree. Yeah. That's part of their territory. It's a strategic account. And so you want to be able to see who are the owners, who's responsible for those accounts, et cetera. And what else have we sold? What have we done already? What stories can I tell to this Geico Corporation that we've already sold? So we call out things like, which products have you already sold, which is colored, and those that are of an open opportunity. And provide more detail so that your reps can see what's going on in the account. They can see more information about each of the opportunities across all the accounts without having to kind of jump around and navigate elsewhere. Now, you asked about territories. So we've already collected this account into its hierarchy. We also have the ability to collect it into a territory. So what you're seeing in this dropdown, this is a demo org, so there's a lot, usually you only have two or three, is the ability to switch to say, hey, show me all the accounts in the territory instead of what's just in that hierarchy. So here you can see that we're on the US insurance territory, and you can see all of the other insurance companies that are part of this territory, including Geico. So automatically behind the scenes, it's collected them all together, and it's doing things like rolling up that information. So I'll click here, and it's providing us with detail on, okay, how many accounts are part of this territory? How much revenue is in there? How many have we closed? What's the penetration across it? So all this data is kind of being rolled up behind the scenes to give you an understanding of how that territory is performing and allow you to, when you're creating territories, balance them, score them, and adjust them until you're ready and you can assign them out.
Okay, this is great. I mean, you're solving a couple of problems here, because the first one that you showed me was Geico versus Berkshire Hathaway, which is a huge conglomerate of multiple brands. Some of them are public, some of them are private.
Yeah.
They're located in the multiple zip codes and states. So having a visibility to that and what's going on in these accounts is really helping to avoid the duplicate efforts, and also creating a situation when, you know, both sellers are trying to approach the same account with different people.
So,
which is, on the one hand, it's a waste of time. On the other hand, it's a tension within the team, right? I mean, nobody wants to spend time on something that they won't get compensated in sales.
Commission splits and conflicts.
Yeah. Right? That's never fun. And somebody's getting the arbitrary decision in the end, because many companies haven't decided that. I mean, maybe large enterprise has a process for that, but still not a pleasant situation. So that's great. I'm assuming you can connect this and integrate with things like Anaplan and other typical sales comp tools, right?
Yeah, third-party systems, okay. ERPs, et cetera. So one of the things that becomes important is as you're kind of orchestrating that data, and usually sales has the best understanding of the customer. Once you do that work, and if you, let's say you disagree with the data that you have in your data provider, we have kind of some stewarding capabilities here that I'll show quickly that's going to allow you to make changes to that. So Berkshire's, I pick strategically because it's a conglomerate, right? GEICO is an insurance company, but you also have railroad companies and you have airlines and you have railroads and batteries, etc. So you may want to actually disagree. You may want to pull out GEICO into its own family tree because it's a massive conglomerate in itself. So here I pull GEICO out of Berkshire, and I may also want to see, hey, what did the data providers miss? Was there any other accounts in the environment that are part of Berkshire? So here you can see BNSF Logistics. So you may want to add that in. So it's this kind of stewardship capability to make your changes according to how you go to market. Now, what happens there, right? So you disagreed. What we do is then provide unique identifiers on the accounts that you can then pass over to those third-party systems you're talking about, the Anaplans, the ERPs, et cetera, so that they have the same understanding of the account and recognize in the same way in those systems.
Yeah, that's one of those things that everyone is complaining about, why I can't see my territories in Salesforce.
Yeah.
Right, why I have to switch to some other provider, look to in a different system. And of course, the layout is different. The data connectivity is different. There's a limited number of fields. You can really drill down and see what's going on that account. So what you essentially enable the teams to do is you embedded this environment in Salesforce that has a broader data connectivity, and then you enable them to set up the territories, and then you send it back into the processing tools that are helping to deal with the payroll, attainment reporting, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly right. We also try to give a little bit of extra visibility, right? So it's helpful to know as a rep which accounts are part of the same family tree, what you've sold. But it's also helpful to see, well, which the accounts that exist outside of our database that we haven't sold into. So we're showing a little bit of what we call white space here. So those accounts that are part of Berkshire or GEICO or whomever that you can go ahead and create if you'd like to go sell to them.
You have a filtering option. You can just filter things that are not covered as well.
Exactly.
So that is giving you a quick preview to that.
And you're just pulling this from a third-party data source, or do you have secret sauce that's like adding to this list?
Both. Yeah. So a lot of people subscribe to a Dun & Bradstreet or ZoomInfo or Clearbit or specific to the industry like Definitive Health. So we can absolutely leverage that to build out the tree. And then as I showed on that stewarding capability, our own matching algorithm to say, hey, we found all these additional accounts that you probably want to bring in. And you can automate that if you trust it.
Have you seen anyone do these hierarchies well for agencies and the clients they own?
Oh, good question. Okay. So in those situations, the struggle is that there's no external data set. And so it becomes a bit more manual, right? Because the agency will sell to Coca-Cola and to NFL and all these others that have no logical tie. And so it's more using those stewardship capabilities, the drag and drop features and the search to create those themselves.
Yeah. Media Radar is kind of the only that does it in a pretty manual way, and they don't inject that into it. Salesforce. So I'm always curious overseeing agency sales of like, that's the constant fight. Like the direct team gets it, they start selling to them and it's like, wait a minute, this is through an agency and whatever. So.
And it's important, right? Because now all of a sudden you just get that understanding of, hey, who are they dealing with? Can we start to do work with those as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That's also the secret sauce. They want to keep this close to the vest. They don't want to share all of that upfront because they know there'll be another loop.
Yep.
So they don't want anyone to reach out to the end customer in the end, right? They want to be a middleman.
Yeah.
I know we didn't talk in detail about an entire orchestration, but how do you help to hand over things brought between the teams, right? So the BDRs to the reps. A very common theme is that the rep is not picking up the lead on time. I think you had a timer. So I'm assuming that's part of it. Is there anything else that helps to improve that handover, right? That's always a pain.
Lots of notifications, right? So it integrates with your systems like Slack and email and whatnot. So it can be letting people know. And then, of course, internal in Salesforce tasks and notifications, of course. But whatever the medium is that you're using to communicate, we can automate and have the links set up to the records that'll take them in there immediately and give them that explanation. Was it a duplicate? Was it brand new? Was it taken away from someone else? So you've got to respond quickly.
That's right. I love it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me show that, guys.
No, absolutely. I think it's a great tool in solving a lot of these underlying pain points, right? People always think that it's a high level strategy, but I think they forget about how to operationalize all of that stuff effectively so that you don't have to spend a lot of time, right? When you're in RevOps, I mean, that type of work doing this manually, that's pain in the ass, let's be honest.
Totally. It's shocking how many people are hiring full teams of people to try and do it manually.
Yeah. Yeah, that shouldn't be taking that much time, right? And to your point, you know, you're coming from the services, so you've been doing this as an outsourcing entity, and you started to, you know, put it in the kind of code form. Hey, you don't have to. You don't have to do this anymore.
Well, and that's such a good point. So we also see people trying to build it themselves. And so that's the world that we lived in, was building custom code to do it, and which can be great. The struggle is that as soon as your rule changes, you're going back into custom code in order to make that change. You want to be able to do it drag and drop and point and click to make those changes quickly, because the reality is reps come and go very quickly and you have to make changes all the time. And then, of course, annually you're changing territories, et cetera.
So let's move into your go-to-market strategy. So how do you sell this? Where is your ICP? Where this functions best?
Yeah, so our ICP, we typically sell into larger businesses, about 1,000 employees and up. Having said that, obviously, we have some smaller customers as well, and happy to. It's just that a lot of these problems present themselves in a bigger way once you have more data, once you have more people bringing information in. So hierarchies, for instance, when you're one or two people, doesn't really matter. But when you have 200 reps, it's a big problem. So we go to market in a few different ways. I like to say we kind of have four primary go-to-markets. So there's inbound from digital marketing events, et cetera. Outbound from business development teams that are going and chasing our ICP. Partnerships, working with Salesforce, with SIs, with other ISVs, et cetera, data providers, and them bring us in when it makes sense, when the customers are suffering from these problems. And then now that we're a little bit bigger, selling into existing customers and getting referrals from those customers into other people that can benefit from them.
That is the best way to go about it. And you are dedicated to this for Salesforce. Have you considered expanding into other CRMs?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And honestly, something that we consider all the time, because it's the same problem in every system, right? Yeah. Everyone's struggling from the same thing. The other is, okay, we're already distracting ourselves with all these different products. So we have five products now, and to do the same in other systems means additional code bases, additional marketing efforts, et cetera. So right now it's all on Salesforce, and we're trying to just capture even more of the demand there because it's this massive ecosystem. But in the future, we'll absolutely extend that into the HubSpots, the world, Dynamics, even the ERPs and other systems like Snowflake and stuff have the issue with data.
Yeah, absolutely. And who are you seeing for competitors? I'm guessing a lot of it is just like status quo. We can manage this on our own, or we'll go and have a consultant build custom code. But are you seeing there is all kinds of tools trying to solve the issues we see in Salesforce or other CRM. So who do you run into the most in terms of competitors?
So because we have those five different products, that each of them kind of have their own competitors. So on the hierarchy side, it's a lot of people trying to do it themselves. On the lead side, it's companies like Lean Data and Ringlead and Distribution Engine that are just doing lead running. On the deduplication side, it's Demand Tools, it's Cloudingo, it's Ringlead again. And then we have other product that I didn't get into because it'll extend too long, but there's other competitors again there.
Yeah. So you're fighting many different battles, or maybe partnering across some of those too, because I'm sure you have customers that use you for one thing, but use someone else for something else.
Absolutely. And that's great, right? So you want to buy the tool that makes most sense for you. What we think we bring to the table is that we're providing this kind of holistic approach to data, where we're not just looking at a point solution, it's trying to coordinate everything that's happening, because it really is that orchestration, right? It's your leads are passing from marketing over into sales, but passing through all these systems in the meantime, that having individual systems do it becomes a pain.
I was sitting with the woman on our team who manages our ABM campaigns and what we're doing there. And she was showing me all of the ways that the tools are connected to do an ABM campaign and ensure that it's getting routed correctly. And I was just like, a lot of tools we have in the mix here to make sure they're connected and everything's operating correctly. So being able to consolidate some of that into one is always nice to not have to worry about that integration. So you're not going into other CRMs on your product roadmap, but what is next for you guys? Where are you guys heading?
So right now, heavy focus on AI, obviously. So leveraging it for making better matches, for orchestrating, for enriching, et cetera. Trying to leverage it as best we can. At the same time, building out other core functionality for booking meetings, for territory definitions and scoring and balancing, et cetera. So there's all sorts of different ways that we're going. And the way I try to look at product roadmap is, what problems are you solving today? And what's kind of upstream and downstream from what you're already solving? Instead of, oh, this is a great idea, let's go this over here. So trying to make sure that it's all coordinated and that we can start to solve earlier problems. I'll give you an example. Hierarchies was first for us. So we started to build that out. And what we learned over time is that people wanted to clean up their hierarchies, but first they wanted to clean up their duplicates. Fantastic. Let's go help with that too. And why are they cleaning up their hierarchies? It's for their territories. Okay, wonderful. So let's go help with that as well. So it's kind of progressed that way.
Yeah, there are always these loops that are just overlapping, right? Little bit, yeah. By little bit, little bit. And it's just creating the full picture of the activities that teams are performing. So that's a good idea, because I think it helps you, on the one hand, to win the customer because you have some comprehensive element in your offering. But at the same time, if they start with one problem because they are not sure if they going to implement this whole thing, they start seeing, okay, this is working. Let me go deeper, deeper, deeper. And then you're adding another module and module, right? So I think it's a good strategy in terms of building the penetration rate on the account and eventually being used by more teams and more individuals that are solving the problems, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, and trying to figure out what are the other problems they're suffering from that we can help to alleviate.
You mentioned the magic word, AI. It's obviously comes up a lot on our podcast. I'm curious how you kind of think about it within this world of revenue operations and sales tech and how you see it going. I think what we tend to see is like people are using it to make smarter decisions within the tools, and that's probably the best use of it, and to be able to make recommendations or provide insights on all of the data that is available. But we'd love to hear your thoughts on how you see it going more broadly outside of just Traction Complete.
I was at the Pavilion Go-to-Market Conference a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to butcher his name, Benedict Evans, I think, was one of the keynote speakers. He used to be an analyst at Andreessen Horowitz. And so now he's focused on AI, and he framed it in a really interesting way that I quite liked. It was that with AI, you have unlimited interns. And it's kind of a good way to look at it in the sense that it is smart. It's incredible. In fact, it might be better than some interns at writing and whatnot, but that you're not going to it for really advanced understanding or idea generation, et cetera, but they can be incredibly helpful for doing these tasks that are somewhat repetitive and easy. And so that is where I think we will see it evolve quickly into anything like that, that's you could get an intern to do that you can start to leverage. I'll give you an example. So we go through security reviews all the time. You can imagine that we're working on data. Data is incredibly important to keep secure. And so we're going through these reviews, and there'll be these 200 questionnaires that we have to fill out. We're doing them all the time. So there's a lot of repeats. So we train a model with all of the questionnaires that we received and all the answers to allow us to then just plug in the new questions from a new security review, and it'll spit out all the answers and we can just plug them in. So things like that, I think AI is going to be incredibly beneficial for crafting messaging, going finding information about people, that sort of thing. And it's not going to be long before it advances beyond that. And that'll be a whole new world that would be for a whole separate podcast.
So do you think this is going to enter a kind of sales, direct sales space more broadly with the avatars selling or buying from the AI?
Oh, it's also interesting. Okay, I heard someone else say, and I can't remember who it was, but say that sales might actually be one of the last things that we can truly remove with AI. And I think it's going to have a massive impact, obviously, in all of the writing of outreach messages and that sort of thing. But that it takes people to convince others to make a decision and whatnot. And it'd be very difficult for AI to do that on its own. Now, will you use it to tell the stories? Yeah, absolutely. To craft better messages and find out detail about it. Yeah.
or give you reminders on a call or whatever it may be. Humans still like humans to sell them things.
Yeah, exactly. But AI will be involved in pretty much every step of the way as well.
So let me test this. Would you buy anything for $100K on behalf of your company from AI?
Oh, okay. So that's another good question because, I mean, think about today's day and age. We're all doing so much more research on whatever it is we're going to buy without talking to a human, right? We're going to the website, we're collecting as much, we're talking to other people about, do you use it? We're reaching out to our networks and how effective it was, that kind of thing. So then at the end of the day, there's very little that you need from that rep, but you do kind of want that final confidence from them. So $100K, not today, I wouldn't. 5K, maybe.
Okay. So PLG will eventually get faster connected with AI and drive that sales automatically. That's probably the area where we see that it is going to start picking up faster.
It'll benefit for sure. I mean, there's already so much PLG going on anyway that AI will just continue to help. Yeah.
So based on that, do you think that the way the sellers were engaged or the companies and service or software providers will change the model of engagement of the customers and prospects?
Certainly. I mean, it already is, right? With all the chatbots and whatnot that are really good at answering questions that are pretty standard. I think the big difference, and I liked how you posed it, Dmitry, the $100,000 purchase decision. And it all depends on the size of business, right? For some, that's nothing. And others, that's too much.
A lot.
But so let's say it's a lot. Making that decision really comes down to confidence in that this is going to be the right solution for us and it's going to provide us a return. And so how do we overcome that level to get the confidence and say, yes, this is going to be the right one? We do our own research. We talk to other people. We also want some assurance from the business itself that they're going to be able to deliver. And I think if we are just doing it through AI, we're not getting anyone else on the other side of the table kind of on the hook to make sure that we're successful in the future. And AI automation can answer all the questions for you really, really well, but they're not going to be able to commit to for the roadmap or improvement or training, et cetera, that kind of thing. That's the way I'd put it.
How about automated demo?
Would we do automated demos with AI? I think there'll be a place for it. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think like a lot of the research is like, how good of a demo can you put on your website? And then we see all these demo tools coming up. And like when you want to do your own research, you want to see the tool. If it's not product-led growth and you can't get a free trial, well, then let's see the demo. And then alternatively, it's like, what tools have I used before at a different company that I like and know and want to bring to this one? Or what tools are my partners recommending me to use because the systems work well? Or what tools do my friends and network tell me to use? So I feel like that is, the salesperson is already not doing most of the education. And so it's already changed quite a bit, even over the past few years, from my perspective.
Absolutely. It is changing quickly. It'll become even more rapid. Yeah.
So what is your take on, on the sales enablement, specifically how the sales enablement role will change in sales education process, right? So there's one thing to learn about all these tools I'm using internally, but there's a whole another level of educating me about, hey, this is what the product can do. Let me give you a good education program that will give you all the features, will give you all the use cases, and will also help you to be a little more prescriptive into what the lead is asking or maybe is interested based on their background, their clicks, their downloads, consumption of any marketing materials.
It's going to help with all of it, by all means. I mean, already there's tools out there that you can help practice your pitch because it's easy to practice with a friend, but it's never until you get in a real world scenario where they get a question that you're not expecting kind of thing. And so there's these tools that are AI that are allowing you to bounce stuff off, which is massive. Providing training material is huge. I do think that there will still, at least for some amount of time, be humans involved to help provide that feedback to make sure that you're on the right path getting to success. Having said that, I'm a huge advocate of Gong. We use it internally. It records calls and whatnot, and it provides analytics. And I am so excited for the companies like Gong and Zoom because of the unstructured data that they're collecting that they can leverage for all sorts of stuff to figure out, okay, well, what are the words that were used to sell for Southern? What was the cadence and the sequence? What was the patterns they used? What was the influence that they provided in order to sell? It's so much psychology, but I think mm-hmm. they're at the forefront to have the detail to be able to unlock that kind of secret sauce. That's going to be really, really intriguing. Now, the crazy part will be, okay, we'll be able to learn it, and then immediately they'll be able to automate it. And so even though we've learned it, we won't need it anymore.
So you mentioned the development of bots. Do you plan to build anything like that on your end?
Chatbots you're talking about?
Yeah, chatbots or AI assistant, something that is giving you a little bit more guidance and nudge and the way that you should be probably setting in the system better, more effectively.
Absolutely. And it's, again, this kind of orchestration between what, because we're built on Salesforce, what Salesforce is providing. They're creating all these incredible agents and what we're helping with on the data side. So yes, to help with that conversational intelligence on the data itself and finding matches and which are the best, et cetera, and integrating, making sure that we're obviously tightly integrated into all the agent automation that Salesforce is doing at the same time.
That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned Gong and really enjoying working with them. What other tools in the sales tech space or other tools that you're using that you think are doing really cool things?
I mean, Salesforce, I'd say first and foremost, obviously, we use Outreach as well. And I think, although we haven't started to leverage much of their AI for writing new sequences and stuff, more and more of that. So they're fantastic. We've just started to use UserJibs in order to see, well, all of our past customers this past year, the past 2 years, a lot of movement, right? Either it was voluntary or involuntary, but people have moved around, and making sure that we're keeping up with that to see if we can then sell into the companies that they've landed at.
Yeah.
That's been a huge help.
Yeah, it's a great data set that they have available within UserJibs. What are the top 3 tips that you have for us today?
Oh, I mean, there's so many areas. I'll stick with Salesforce because that's kind of where we've found our expertise. One of the things I like to do from, and this is not outside of our products. So from our seller's point of view, I'm a huge advocate of data, obviously, but trying to get down to the core leading indicators. So what are those activities that you're doing that are going to impact the net result? So the net result is your revenue. Sales helps with that, retention helps with that. But what got to the sales, what got to opportunities was the activities and the outbound. So making sure that in Salesforce, you're tracking that, but also making it very, very visible to your team. Across the team, so having leader dashboards, very helpful because you get to set that bar higher and higher as people creep up, but also individually. So making sure you have an individual dashboard for each of your reps so that they can compare themselves to their past selves as well. In both ways. And I'm fascinated by this. So we have young reps that obviously want to get better and better and more as they learn, but also more senior reps like, wait a minute, you're not doing as much activity as you used to. And you're finding ways of efficiency. They're maybe getting better and better at creating ops, but it's that good benchmark to continue to trend. So that would be one. Second one I'd say is that inside Salesforce, make it very, very clear what your goals are for the quarter, for the year, et cetera. And so you can do that on your dashboards where you have a company-wide one. Under each dash that you can have a subtitle and it'll say, hey, our goal for ARR is our goal for sales, our goal for marketing leads, for opportunities, for dollar pipeline, all of them, put all of that in there. So you're tracking towards it so that it's very, very clear to everybody, and then bring it up constantly. Cause it's amazing how it's all in there, but people just don't check it out. So make sure that you're kind of bringing it up on each of those meetings.
I like that. We just talked to a cool, more of a startup, RevCast, the other day, and they're helping to do a lot of these reports to make it even easier and bringing in other data. So there always could be more data and tables and things used within Salesforce. But then, yes, you need people logging in and looking at them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a evolution overall in sales that brings people closer to the data, more analytics, better understanding what's going on. You know, you can't be just a seller these days. I think you have to be able to change the hat, be a business person. You have to be able to speak to the numbers, explain them. You have to understand where this is starting, where this is ending, et cetera, to your point, right? Yeah. Revenue is the ultimate goal and output metric. So if you can't really explain how your actions or your team's actions are really driving this, I think it's going to be hard for you to keep the job.
Totally. Now, I think you asked for three. I think I gave you two. So I'll give you one more. The last one I'd say is making sure on the sales team that you're multi-threading, that you're talking to more than one person. Why? Because this year we saw might have a champion, they're all in, and then they get laid off or they leave, and all of a sudden you're dead in the water. But also, because what happens throughout the sales cycle is you don't actually know at the beginning who the decision maker is and who the final sayer is. And so my suggestion is to map out the people on all of the deals and all the accounts in the environments that you're selling to, and taking notes on, okay, well, how are they going to be involved? And how frequently am I talking to them? So that when you're in your one-on-ones, if you're a sales leader, you can quickly see who the decision maker is. Do you have, oh, you don't have them yet. And that's fine, you're early stage, but we need to work and make a plan to get to that person, get in front of them and do it quickly so we're not finding out on the last day or two of the quarter.
Couldn't agree with that more. And I think that's a great last tip for us to wrap up with. So thank you so much, David. It was a lot of fun to learn more about Traction Complete and hear your insights and thoughts on the industry in general.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Great to meet you.